Please be seated. The court is ready to hear argument in 061028, John Leland, DDS, versus George Brandle and Ruth Brandle.
May it please the court, Ms. Stevens will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. The issue before the court this morning in this case is whether an appellate court can remand to the trial court for consideration of whether to grant a 30-day extension to cure a defect in an expert report that's been provided by the plaintiff in a health care liability claim. I'd like to focus my argument this morning on the reasons that such a remand is not available under the plain language of the statute. The primary objective of Section 74.351 is to require a plaintiff in a health care liability claim to provide a report from a qualified expert that addresses all of the required elements that are found in subsection R6 of the statute within 120 days of filing their lawsuit. If a plaintiff fails to do that, either by not providing any report at all or by providing a report that is deficient in some manner, the trial court is required under subsection B to dismiss the case with prejudice and grant relief upon a proper motion from the defendant as provided in subsection B of the statute. The statute does provide one opportunity for the trial court to grant a single 30-day extension of the 120-day period if a compliant report has not been served because a deficiency is found in a timely filed report. The only requirement found in subsection C, which is the part of the statute that governs the 30-day extension of time, is that the trial court finds some deficiency in the report.
How do you know that it's the trial court? It just says the court.
I think the reason for that, Your Honor, and one of the things that I wanted to do this morning is kind of talk about the different situations that arise and how they are handled on review. And the reason
I don't disagree that a trial court could, but I'm just wondering if it just says the court, why it's limited to the trial court.
Because I think the purpose of the legislature, the overall purpose, was to provide for an expeditious resolution of the issues pertaining to the expert report. And I think if they intended that the appellate court could either grant a 30-day extension of time or remand to the trial court after an initial interlocutory appeal, what it does is basically establishes that in a large majority of those cases, there's going to be a second interlocutory appeal filed. And I think that the legislature
isn't part of the purpose to fix something after you find out it's broken.
I think that is part of the purpose, Your Honor. But I think, interestingly, this court in a previous case, Walker versus Gutierrez, which granted was filed under the previous version of the statute, 4590I, not under Chapter 74, the court has said that there's really not a requirement that a plaintiff or any party to a lawsuit be put on notice of the specific deficiency in the report. And the language in that opinion, this court's opinion, says, we do not believe the Constitution requires prior notice that the law is serious about a clearly stated consequence for failing to comply with its terms.
But the legislature did change the statute and said, look, there are going to be times when a plaintiff files an expert report that's deficient in some fundamental respect, and we're going to give that plaintiff an opportunity to cure that if they can, if it's possible to do, one time and one time only. So I think I'm along the same question line as Justice Heck. Why would you not give them that same opportunity? When the trial court makes a mistake and doesn't recognize the deficiency, Court of Appeals does, and you put them back to status quo. Plaintiff, you have one more time. You've got one chance only to cure this. That way, meritorious claims go forward. If they can't do it, then the case is dismissed.
I think that the answer to that question, Justice Jefferson, is that the legislature just didn't provide for it. I don't think there's anything in the statute as it stands under Chapter 74 that says that the trial court is required to allow a plaintiff to cure a deficiency in an expert report.
Not required to, but may. So it's remanded for that purpose.
They can, but I think that the issue on appeal would be whether or not the trial court abused its discretion. And if it's not an abuse of discretion, I don't think there's...
It wasn't asked to cure an expert.
I'm sorry?
The trial court was not asked to cure the deficiency. Is that right? Did the plaintiff ask for a deficiency an opportunity to cure a deficiency in its expert report in this case?
Yes, they did.
But the trial court said no, the report is sufficient, correct?
Correct.
And denied the motion to dismiss?
Correct.
So that request became moot. It didn't matter anymore. If I'm the plaintiff and the trial court says this is a good report, then why am I going to try to cure it?
I don't think you would. I think what the legislature was trying to do was to limit the availability of interlocutory appeal. I think they were trying to say we want to give the trial court an opportunity to grant that extension if they think it's necessary. If they don't think it's necessary, then the appellate court, it's in the ball's in the appellate court's court, to make that determination. I don't think that the plaintiff is necessarily entitled to a 30-day extension of time. I don't think there's...
Suppose the trial judge says, he's very candid, and he says, I think this report is fine. I see the legal issue. I recognize the Court of Appeals may disagree with me. If they do, and I knew that that was the answer, I would give you a 30-day grace period now, but I don't think it is. So I'm holding the report is okay and not granting the motion to dismiss. Even in that situation, you don't see a problem with the Court of Appeals, with the giving an extension after the Court of Appeals rules.
I do see a problem with giving an extension after the Court of Appeals rules. I don't think that that's what the legislature provided, because I think what it does is it allows for a second interlocutory appeal with respect to that expert report, and I think they were trying to avoid that. I think what they were trying to do is create a framework in which the issues regarding the expert report are resolved in as short a period of time in the front end of the lawsuit as possible. And by allowing the one interlocutory appeal when the trial court finds the report sufficient and the motion to dismiss is just not denied, the defendant gets to file an interlocutory appeal. By allowing another opportunity for the trial court or the appellate court to grant an extension of time at that point.
But the point is, even if it could have been cured so that a valid claim could go forward, you're saying the plaintiff completely loses that right when it won it won the ruling at the trial court level.
I think that's correct. I think they are given the opportunity by the fact that they have 2 years after, you know, before they bring their claim at all, they have time between the
Well, here they, Judge Abels denied the motion to strike 2 years ago, and the Court of Appeals said report was inadequate a little over 1 year ago. And so now, if we go down and give them another 30 days, basically have had 2.5 years to get an expert report. Is that in any way a hardship on your client?
I believe it is, Your Honor. I think that the primary motivation of that legislation is to prevent the time and expense that and the judicial resources that are devoted to resolving these issues about a part of the statute which is intended to be a preliminary and threshold provision.
Do you do these a lot? Are you involved in 4590I?
I do some.
I see a lot of these cases now since all of them are appealed. When the trial judge denies a motion to strike, are a high percentage of these appealed on interlocutory appeals, or is that rare?
I believe it's a high percentage, Your Honor.
And if the trial judge, in what percentage of the time when a defendant files a motion to strike, what percentage of the time are the judges extending 30 days right then? Let me say, first of all, defendant says there's something wrong with this report. Do many plaintiffs then change their report?
Yes.
Okay. So they've got a chance to change it, and then if the defendant still objects, you go in for a hearing. Are the judges... Does this conversation ever take place where the judge says, well, I'm not sure, I think it may have a problem, why don't I give you 30 days to make sure there's no problem?
I think that does happen, Your Honor, and I think, interestingly, a couple of courts, I believe the Houston Court of Appeals, has had a case in which the trial court initially found the report adequate, and then on the plaintiff's motion, the trial court withdrew that opinion and granted a 30-day extension of time because the plaintiff is concerned that if they don't get the 30-day extension from the trial court, then they're not going to get it. And so the plaintiff is actually coming in and saying, we'd like to take this opportunity to amend the report just to you know, relieve any possibility that the Court of Appeals is going to find that this report is inadequate. And I think what the legislature is trying to do is to get them to put their best report out there in the very beginning. Do it not at day 119, but at day one or day seven. File your expert report and allow that process to begin. And I think that any party or any plaintiff who's considering filing one of these claims is on notice from the beginning that they have 120 days. That's what the legislature said was a fair amount of time to get that.
150, you know, depending on a cure. Now, there are a lot of courts of appeals that have looked at this question, whether there can be a remand and permitting an extension. Which way have they come down? Is there a majority trend yet?
I think the majority of the courts have probably been allowing the trial court to go back and consider a 30-day remand. Since we have filed briefing in this case, there has been a couple of decisions. There's a decision out of the Houston First Court of Appeals in Houston, the Mainland versus Burkhalter case, and that's at 227 Southwest 3rd, 221, in which the Houston Court of Appeals reversed and rendered judgment. And there's also a case out of the Austin Court of Appeals, Bogar versus Esparza, which was also issued after a briefing was complete in this case, in which the Austin Court of Appeals did something actually different and kind of has a hybrid response to these situations. Rather than saying the appellate court is always allowed to remand for consideration of a 30-day extension or not, what they're saying is that they might be able to remand depending upon the type of deficiency that's found in the report, which I think opens the door pretty wide for a lot of variation in how the courts of appeals handle it, if that was the model that was accepted by this court.
Your concern with allowing the Court of Appeals remand to stand is that there would be, or may be, a second interlocutory appeal, which is not efficient as you see it. And I guess that's a potential detriment. What about the other side of the coin, where we know some of these cases shouldn't be filed? Some of them are meritorious. For those that are meritorious, under your approach, some of the claimants would get a possibility or a chance to revise their report after a 30-day extension, and some wouldn't. What's the harm with having the Court of Appeals or sending it back down to the trial court to consider the 30-day extension that some trial courts would have granted, but this one didn't?
Because I think what is likely to happen is what I anticipate would happen in this case, is that the trial court would grant a 30-day extension of time because the Court of Appeals says there's a deficiency. The trial court is in the position of saying, this is a report that I found adequate the first time. The amended report is going to come back, and I think it's likely that the trial court is going to find it adequate on the second time and deny a second motion to dismiss, and there's going to be an interlocutory appeal. I think that's the situation that the legislature was trying to avoid, is having multiple interlocutory appeals regarding the requirements of the expert report in a single case.
If the Court of Appeals found the report to be deficient and thinks there should be an opportunity to take another look at it at the trial court, isn't that the right result then? Isn't that the result the trial court should have found if the higher court said that?
I think what the trial court should have found is if there's not a compliant expert report filed in the first 120 days, then the trial court is required to dismiss that lawsuit with prejudice. And I think if the Court of Appeals says...
Or consider a continuance.
Or consider a 30-day extension of that 120-day window. But I think that's their one opportunity to do it.
When the judge is deciding whether to give a 30-day extension, what's the conversation? What do we discuss when we're deciding whether I should give you an extra 30 days or not?
Well, the defendant is saying they shouldn't have an opportunity to cure. They're on notice. They have knowledge of these.
Told them what the problem was, and they didn't fix it.
Correct.
And the plaintiff's attorney says...
Even there's no deficiency in my report, but even if you do find a deficiency in my report, I am entitled or it should be permitted 30 days to correct and establish that we do comply with the requirements of the statute.
Ms. Stevens, and we can get into this more on rebuttal also, but talk about the other issue about supplemental reports and whether that deprives a plaintiff of a chance of a 30-day extension to cure a deficient report.
I think what you may be asking is because they have filed a supplemental report after we filed our objections.
Right.
But, okay, I think in this particular situation, even if this court agrees that there are some situations in which a 30-day remand after the first interlocutory appeal is warranted, I think it's not warranted in this case, because the amended report that was filed by the expert in this case specifically says that it was filed, made specifically to respond to Dr. Leland's objections. And if you look at the first paragraph of that report, it says, I would like to respond to the motion to strike with the following opinions. He's specifically addressing and making an effort to cure what we pointed out as objections and deficiencies in that report. Specifically, the first paragraph that he has in response is dealing with his expert qualifications. And I think if he, in the first report, and then knowing the objection in the second report, doesn't know of anything or list anything that provides him the qualifications to make him a qualified expert report.
For interview, that counts as his one and only chance to cure.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
The court, Ms. Squires, will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. The legislature gave claimants like the Brandels the opportunity to cure their timely served but deficient expert reports. Dr. Leland is asking this court to legislate from the bench and take that opportunity away.
Well, the statute's a little ambiguous, isn't it?
The statute here is interesting. I think that would be a good word to use to describe it.
And C says the court may grant, doesn't say the trial court. How do we know which court that is?
I think it has to be the trial court that determines that relief in the first instance, because until that relief has been either granted or denied, the appellate court doesn't have a judgment to rule on. So I think that question would not be right until it was brought to the trial court's attention in the first place.
But the first phrase of C says if an expert report has not been served within the period because elements of the report are found deficient, that would have to be found deficient by a court, right?
Correct, that finding.
And in this case, that court was, so you agree we would have to imply court into the first phrase there.
Yes,
it's not found deficient by the defendant or found deficient by the city council. It's got to be found deficient by a court.
Correct, and I don't think.
And in this case, that court would be the appeals court that found it deficient.
Yes, sir.
How can we, if court's in both the first phrase and the second, you're saying the first phrase has to be the appeals court, but the second has to be the trial court. Seems a little inconsistent. If it's the court, it ought to be the court that found it deficient, shouldn't it?
It does seem a little inconsistent. And the jurisdictional question here about what level of appellate review the legislature intended will be presented tomorrow in an argument in Lewis v. Funderburk. I set the statute out in this way in the oral argument exhibits. I know y'all have a sea of blue briefs here.
My question is, we're a court. We can't construe court to mean one thing, and if court is in both parts of the sentences, how can a court say, well, it means one thing in this part and one thing in another part? Isn't that what you're asking us to do?
I'm not, because I don't think the legislature intended for appellate courts to be able to review deficiencies like this. That's not an issue I raised. I did not file a petition for review of that question.
What did the San Antonio Court of Appeals do?
I think that
said it was deficient, right?
If you look at section 54.014,
we conclude Dr. Gray's expert report is deficient. That's what the fourth court said.
Correct, Your Honor.
So if they're the court that found it deficient, why aren't they the court that grants a 30-day extension or not?
Because typically appellate courts can't grant that relief in the first instance. I think there has to be a request and either a...
If the legislature says they should this court say we refuse, or what are we going to say? I mean, the legislature, under the Constitution, the legislature says what our jurisdiction is, period. We either have it or we don't, and they say. And if they say they want the same court that found it deficient, on what basis do we say we refuse?
I think you have to look at the interlocutory appeal statute that gives the jurisdiction to make those decisions. And here, the interlocutory appeal statute, this is that interplay between 74.351B and C. The interlocutory appeal statute gives interlocutory appeal jurisdiction to for defendants to appeal an interlocutory order when a report when no report is timely served. So if there is no report at all.
Yes, but you've not raised that issue.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So we should assume that that's not correct for purposes of this case. We should assume for purposes of this case is you've not raised the issue. We have it tomorrow in the other case. Whether, assuming the Court of Appeals can determine the inadequacy of the report, shouldn't they go ahead and decide whether you should have an opportunity to cure? Why should that go back to the trial court who's already been wrong once?
Because I think the purpose of an appeal to the intermediate Court of Appeals is to correct error. It's to put the parties back in the position that they would have been in if the trial court had ruled correctly in the first place. And here, if the trial court had ruled correctly in tab 3 of your oral argument exhibits, I've got the letter from the trial court saying, on November 1st, the defendant's motion is overruled. And on that date, the claimants still had time in their 120-day window in which they could file a new report from a new expert. Subsection A of the statute envisions multiple reports being filed by multiple experts. And here, the claimants still had time on their 120-day time clock to do that. So I think to deprive the trial court of the discretion that the legislature granted it, it would be erroneous here.
You argue you don't even need a new expert. You can fix this report.
Yes, Your Honor, we can.
By showing more particularly what his qualifications are to establish care and causation and breach.
Yes, Your Honor. Here, our expert report, and again, we didn't file a petition for review on this issue, so we have conceded our expert report to be deficient. We didn't do a very good job. Our expert didn't do a very good job of laying out his qualifications. But his CV established that he may have the qualifications to be able to render an adequate report on this topic. That's why the Fourth Court of Appeals did not reverse and render. Instead, it reversed and remanded. And I'm asking this court today to...
Well, I'm not sure I understand that. Suppose you think if the Court of Appeals had found this fellow was just not qualified at all, it couldn't be fixed, they would still remand, in your view.
I think they would actually render in that instance, depending on which date is the operative date, whether it's November the 14th, which was the date the trial court judgment was entered, which, as you can see from tab 2 of the oral argument exhibits, I've put together a calendar. And November 14th was the date the trial court judgment was entered. November 1st was the date that the trial court sent out its letter saying, I'm going to deny the defendant's relief. But if you're using the date of November 14th, the date that the judgment was entered, then that's outside the 120-day window. And then if this type of deficiency could not be cured, then it would be too late for...
Well, it could be cured by a different expert. That's your argument.
If we're outside the 120-day window, I'm not so sure we get that opportunity.
So let me be clear, are you arguing that the Court of Appeals should exercise the discretion to grant the extension or not, or should send it back to the trial court to consider the factors under C, good faith and the like, to determine whether an extension should be granted?
I think the Court of Appeals should send it back to the trial court if the claimant is not otherwise disqualified from receiving the extension. There are several factors that go into the trial court's determination, not the least of which is the statute says you can only have one of these extensions. So if the trial court already granted one of these extensions and the plaintiff filed another report and then was in the same exact instance circumstance that we're in now, there would be no need to remand. The correct judgment in that case would be a judgment of rendition because the plaintiff could not cure, would be statutorily disqualified.
So even in this hypothetical case, if an extension had been granted, went up to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals says, well, the report is deficient for something the trial court never even thought about, there should be no opportunity for a second extension, in your opinion?
If it's outside of the 120 days, yes. Yes, and that goes back to Chief Justice Jefferson's question. You asked if there was a majority trend, and here there is. And that's the rule that I'm asking this court to adopt today. If the claimant is statutorily disqualified from receiving an extension, if they've already received their one extension, if they did not submit an expert report on causation that was authored by a physician, or if the claimant's expert report does not name the defendant or describe the deficient health care that the defendant provided, those are no reports. And in that instance, it's as if no report was ever served at all. In that instance, the correct answer for the appellate court is to render. But as long as the claimant is not disqualified from receiving an extension, I would ask this court to adopt the rule that the cause should be remanded so that the trial court can consider granting that relief in the first place.
So give me the argument. We're now 2 years and 120 days after the case was filed. If it goes back down and you get an extension, give me the argument that the legislature intended in malpractice cases for this report to be delivered in some circumstances 2 years and 120 days after the case started.
I think the plain language of the statute doesn't speak directly to that, but in the prior, under the prior.
But opposing counsel said, this is a harsh statute. This is, we want to know whether there's an expert in the first 4 months. That's inconsistent, isn't it, with saying we want to know whether there's a live expert on this case within the first 4 months, except if there's some question about it, 2.5 years is okay.
I just have to disagree with that, because I think the legislature crafted into this statute and a couple of exceptions that were in the prior statute. The prior statute had been interpreted such that claimants in this exact circumstance, if the trial court found their reports sufficient, the appellate court found the report deficient, the appellate courts under 4590I were reversing and remanding so that the trial court could consider granting the extension. Legislature in no way attempted to change that. There were 61 hours of testimony on this bill, something like 545 witnesses, and I read all of it. There is nothing in the legislative history of this bill, in the argument on the floor of the Senate or of the House, that shows any intent to change that practice.
You know, what's troubling to me, though, is it's hard for me to think that the legislature intended to allow two interlocutory appeals over this question. Do you think that's what their intent was?
The way that the statute is written, I think we have no alternative but to assume that that's what they meant. It does seem to be inconsistent with the legislature's belief that we needed to weed out the very frivolous lawsuits very quickly, and that to ensure that frivolous lawsuits weren't being filed, we needed to have some kind of a physician opine as to whether this was a valid claim or not. But still, the legislature didn't change from the previous statute the term good faith effort. And this court in Palacios tells us that the term good faith effort is a pretty low threshold. So if the legislature really wanted to make that a hard and fast rule, I think they had the tools by which to do so. Under the old statute, the biggest difference between the new act and the old act is, under the old act, a claimant who failed to file a report at all within the statutory deadline was permitted the opportunity to extend, and so was permitted the opportunity to cure. We don't have that under the new statute. I think that's the hard and fast rule the legislature intended. I think that's the hard and fast rule that this court should adopt.
Is it your position that you're entitled to a hearing to present new evidence for the court to hear in determining whether to grant the 30-day extension?
I'm not sure that it would be evidence. To me, it seems like it would just be argument of counsel as to whether there is a good reason in this case. And again, it would be completely discretionary with the trial court.
All right. So
if it's just argument of counsel, we could do that here, couldn't we?
Yes. I was about to say that if in fact the Court of Appeals that determined this was insufficient were to be required, if the statute were read to give them the authority or require them to make that decision, there's nothing new that would be, there's nothing that the claimant would be deprived of by the Court of Appeals making that decision, if it's only argument of counsel or if you're not entitled to new hearing for some other reason. And I don't see that in the statute, that you would be entitled to anything as far as a hearing or to offer more.
The only thing I can go back to, excuse me, is just the general request for relief. And under the local rules of Bexar County and Bandera County, where this case arose, I do know that in order to request relief, you have to set a hearing. So,
but if we're going to have the court, if the term court is Court of Appeals, we're not using the local rules of Bexar or Bandera County.
Yes, Your Honor, that's...
The trial court can grant that motion to cure for any reason, right? I mean, is there any restriction on what it can do? Does it have to be, I think you've gotten close, but not close enough, I'm going to give you another shot, or I'm not sure, so I'm going to give you a chance to cure, or, there's no restriction on that. Isn't that correct?
As long as the expert is not statutorily disqualified, you're correct, Your Honor, there is no limitation.
So the legislature they are giving the claimant a couple chances, but not many. You've got one, you have to file your report within 120 days, and then if there's a deficiency, you better get the next time. If the trial court even gives you the chance, you better get it right or next time.
Correct. And I think the interpretation requested by the petitioner in this case stands our general notions of due process on its head. If that were the rule, if this court were to adopt that as the rule...
Well, I mean, this is sui generis. There's nothing else where you've got to have an expert report in the first 120 days. And the reason this happened, we all know, is because a lot of people were filing cases and they were never going to have an expert. And the legislature had hearings on, and they made a finding, both houses of the legislature, the governor, people are filing these cases. They're never going to have an expert, and the case lasts for months and burns up a lot of insurance money. Now, your case, it looks to me, from reading the CA opinion, it looks pretty close. The question's not here, but I don't know that much about anesthesiology. But we've been told in this chamber, from right where you're standing, by another attorney in a case, that some judges have told her they just disagree with this statute and not going to do it, trial judges. Now, if we had a case where the defendant wasn't even named and the trial judge says, report's fine with me, and we spend 2 years coming up on an appeal, why should we send it back to that guy or girl and the trial judge to say, let's do it all again?
I don't think you should. Because there,
how can we, if we remand to that same trial judge to say, well, you want to give him another 30 days? On a judge who, by his own admission, has said, I don't believe in this statute and I'm not going to enforce it. Why? How could that possibly be a good idea?
Justice Brister, under your factual scenario, there was no timely report served within the 120 days. So the trial court would not have discretion.
So you add to the deficiencies that you don't have discretion is if the defendant is not named. How about if there's nothing about causation in it? Is that another one where you can't get an extension?
Correct.
Okay. So let me get the list of things that you don't get extensions for. If the defendant, if there's seven defendants and you only name six, you can't get an extension. If you cover breach, standard of care and breach, but not causation, you can't get an extension at all. Right?
Correct.
And your case is one where they say the guy's not qualified because he hadn't said anything about being qualified. But that one's not on the list. If we can tell he's not qualified, then you don't get an extension then too, right, if he's just not qualified?
The analogy that was used in one of the previous cases where the counsel standing at this table argued that was, what if the report was from a plumber? That's no report. That's not a report that can be cured outside of the 120 days. It's not a report at all. So I would ask this court to adopt a rule that the expert report has to discuss, at least lay out in a good faith effort, the standard of care, breach, causation. The causation requirement has to be authored, or the causation report, rather, has to be authored by a physician. The report has to name the defendant and describe the defendant's actions. That's this court's opinion in Langley v. Jernigan. And the claimant cannot have already had one extension. If those requirements are met, I think the appropriate thing for the Court of Appeals to do is to remand. If a single one of those requirements is not met, then the appropriate action from the Court of Appeals is to render a judgment of dismissal because the claimant cannot cure their expert.
You were saying the doctor's argument stands due process on his head, and I was curious about what you were going to say.
I think here that ruling would encourage plaintiffs to file absolutely deficient reports so that the trial court would hold the report to be deficient and then grant the extension. I think what we have here is a case where the claimant's expert...
Why would plaintiff's attorneys do that?
Because then they could definitely get the extension. They could have another bite at the apple.
But then they have to do the work twice. Don't you want to be efficient if you're a plaintiff's lawyer getting billed by result, getting paid by result rather than by the hour? You want to do it right the first time if you can in the least amount of time.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I think here when the problems with this expert report were brought to our attention, we did the responsible thing. We amended that report. We gave the trial court the report that we thought was sufficient. And it may well be that on remand the trial court says, you know what, it's been 2 years, and the point of this statute is to get defendant doctors in and out if you can't get a good expert to say there was a problem here, to do that Palacios analysis and to guarantee me or assure me as the trial court that this claim has merit.
That's a good
point.
You were
starting to address the due process question from the chief. Did you finish that? Because if you did, I've got another question.
I did not. I think a good kind of analogy would be, and I beg the court's forgiveness for the sports analogy, but nobody would watch the NFL if in the playoffs, the very first two teams to play, the team that won got sent home, and the team that lost had a second chance to advance. And I think that...
Depends which team that was.
Well, then there's that. Then there's that. But I think in that instance, the NFL wouldn't have fans because that system would be fundamentally unfair.
You've raised an issue in which the court would definitely split up.
There is that.
Ms. Squires, briefly, we're in negative time now, but talk briefly about the supplemental report issue. And, of course, there were concerns raised from Dr. Leland. You filed supplemental reports before there was a ruling from the trial court about deficiency or not. They say that counts as your one and only chance to cure the report, and you disagree. And what else do you have to say beyond your briefing?
Section 74.351A envisions claimants filing multiple reports from multiple defendants. So if in response to Dr. Leland's objection, the Brandels decided to file a new report from a new expert, the statute provides that they could have. I fail to see a distinction between that and filing an addenda to the previously filed, the initially filed expert report.
If you had never sought or filed a request for a 30-day extension at trial, would your position be the same, that you're entitled to a remand?
That's a tricky issue, and I think you have to request relief in order to complain that the lower court erred by refusing to grant that relief. And so that's how I would distinguish this case from Martinez-Partido, the other case from the San Antonio Court of Appeals.
But it wouldn't have erred if the report were sufficient, right?
Correct.
Get it wrong, I suppose, but if you and the trial court believe conclusively this report does exactly what it needs to do, why would you also move for an opportunity to cure it?
To request alternative relief in the event that the trial court found it, it's just a good way to cover your bases.
Yeah, but you're saying it's required.
I think if you're going to complain about it later, I think that, yes, that's an important fact, because then how in the world can you complain about the Court of Appeals or the trial court refusing to grant?
So you would be asking the trial court not to deny the defendant's motion to dismiss. I mean, that's essentially what you'd be saying. Don't deny their grant it or give me a chance to cure one or the other.
I think you would file a request or request relief just like we did here, which was A, in the first place, our report is sufficient, but B, if our report is somehow found deficient, it's something that deficiency can be cured, and so we would request a 30-day extension to cure.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
I think the questions from the justices raised an important point, and I want to go back to something that I said in my initial argument, which is that there's really nothing in the statute that tells the trial court they have to grant a 30-day extension in this situation or they're prohibited from granting a 30-day extension in this situation. And I would concede or agree with Ms. Squires that the one situation in which the statute says you can't grant a 30-day extension is if no expert report has been filed, like there's nothing. But even in the situation in which a trial court grants a 30-day extension when there has been no report filed, there's no expert on the table at all,
If the trial court says, I find this letter from this doctor that's in the medical records to be a report, and it's just deficient, and I'm going to grant you 30-day extension of time, there's not any provision in the statute or in the Civil Practice and Remedies Code 51.014 that says that there is appellate review of that decision to grant the 30-day extension of time. I think that it's presumed that the trial court's action in that situation is going to be addressed on review of what they do with the motion to dismiss. And the issue is, on that appeal, did the trial court abuse its discretion in granting the motion to dismiss, not what it did with the 30-day extension of time? Because I don't think that the legislature intended for you to be able to go back and correct what they did with the 30-day extension and then go back and correct what they do with the amended report. So I think that it's considered in the context of what they do with the motion to dismiss that's going to be filed by the defendant. And if the trial court...
Respondent says that if the report doesn't have some key pieces to it, it's not really a report and there's not any more time.
Correct.
You agree with that?
Do I agree with the notion that it's considered no report if it is... Sure.
Or it's not filed in good faith.
Sure. But I still think that there might be situations...
That's troubling to me because it seems to me that there are just going to be disagreements about what's enough evidence on causation. That's what we try lawsuits about.
And I think that's exactly why there should only be one opportunity, one point in time in which that 30-day extension is granted.
But so there is a chance to cure when there's a disagreement about whether the defendant has adequately put forward evidence on causation in the expert report.
I think that the trial court might do anything. As was pointed out by the justice in the previous questioning, there might be a judge in some part of the state where they just disagree with the statute and they say, I don't care.
No, I'm saying you agreed with Ms. Quire that if there is a lack of an essential element like causation, that constitutes no report. But then I think we just said, well, if there's a question about causation, then there's an opportunity to cure. And it seems to me that the latter is correct. That's why the legislature put that in there, because there are going to be times they recognize where a report is deficient, which means it won't pass muster. It is not really an expert report as defined in the statute, but nevertheless, there's an opportunity that the claimant has to cure at one time.
I think that the trial court has the opportunity to give them that 30-day extension, but I don't think that they're required to, and I don't think that the...
No, they're not.
So I don't think that there is an abuse of discretion there if the trial court doesn't. And that's why I think that if you look at that, it's being considered in the context of what they do with the motion to dismiss on it filed by the defendant.
They're not required, but they're permitted to consider, I suppose, whether or not. In the event that they find that the report is not sufficient, then they have an opportunity, claimant can argue, defendant can argue against, but to consider whether or not to grant it 30 days.
Yes, yes. I do want to also point out...
Yes, a question.
Sure.
What is... Justice Brister was... We're struggling with what the court is here. What would be the problem, as you see it, with if the Court of Appeals determined the report was deficient, the Court of Appeals then made the decision on 30 days, and then you came right back, you filed it, and right, it's over with right there, one way or the other, or you...
I still think that the defendant would have an opportunity to file new objections and a new motion to dismiss with respect to the amended expert report, in which case you get another interlocutory appeal.
Well, but aren't you up on, didn't you file your objections in the trial court, and that's what you're complaining about? Or do you just say it's a bad report?
I think that when the plaintiff files their amended report during the 30-day window.
No, let's talk about the original report.
Okay.
The defendant has to object to the report. So here's where it's wrong. And then the trial court denies it, and you go up on appeal. Interlocutory appeal.
Correct.
All right. Then on interlocutory appeal, the Court of Appeal says, whoop, it was a good objection. Aren't you locked in and everybody's focused on the issue at that point, whether it can be cured?
Yes, but then...
Why would you get... to object to another part of the report when what you went up on is the issue addressed by the Court of Appeals. So I don't see how the defendant would be entitled to another objection because you've already isolated the issue, haven't you?
I think the issue is isolated, but whether or not the amended report cures the deficiency is another issue. I mean, in this situation, the expert filed an amended report in response to the objection that we didn't think he stated his qualifications sufficiently. He filed a report in which he was addressing that specific deficiency, and the Court of Appeals still said he didn't state them sufficiently. Right. So I think there's a possibility that the cure report doesn't adequately cure, and so the defendant still has the opportunity to file a motion to dismiss with respect to the new report.
Any further questions?
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Counselor. The cause is submitted, and the Court will take a brief recess.
All rise.